This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman.
This is Lauren Lester, the voice of Robin and Nightwing.
And you're listening to the DCAU Review,
hosted by Cal and Liam,
streaming at DCAUReview.com
and on your favorite podcast app.
Gotham City is out of control.
An entire city screaming in fear.
Supervillains walk the streets, preying on the innocent.
They will learn the true nature of power.
The police are powerless. A creature prowls this urban wasteland.
Who's that?
He moves in darkness. For some, he is a rumor. A name whispered in the corridors of the underworld, waiting for the chance to strike. Let every criminal know the acid taste of fear.
You crazy!
Bat! Giant bat!
Gotham has forgotten what justice means. The Dark Knight is here to remind them.
Who are you?
Batman. Good guys wear black.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 286 of the DCAU Review. I am one of your hosts, Cal. With me, my good friend, good brother, the man that runs our social media pages, it's Liam. Liam, we are reviewing Batman the Animated Series. As longtime listeners will know, this is what we have the most of, although we are beginning to wind down at least the original BTOS and Adventures of Batman and Robin run here. But we have another one this week that I think we credited last week as one of the episodes that when we were reading through, well, we'll just say that it's almost pretty much responsible for us having this podcast to begin with.
Absolutely. And another memorable episode to talk about this week, at least in our household. This is another one that I feel like ends up at the bottom of a lot of people's lists.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like I recognize pretty much every part of this episode. I knew this one very well coming in.
Yes, indeed. We are going to be reviewing The Lion and the Unicorn. And as I alluded to, the reason why this holds such a pivotal portion, not just because we had it recorded off of Fox Kids and watched it, that whole like last week that they dropped new episodes on, we had that mm-hmm. full week on videotape. So we had all those last episodes that we could watch over and over and over and over again. And this is certainly one that we went back to several times. But as you mentioned, this one, when the 25th anniversary of Batman the Animated Series was happening, all those Nerdist and comicbook.com and all those other listicles that came out listing their top to bottom, this ended up being close to the bottom on most, if not all, of the lists that I remember reviewing. And I feel like that's at the time we felt like that was a miscarriage of justice. So we'll be interested to see if that holds true here as we get into our review. Before we do, Liam, we will, of course, remind our listeners, if you want to support the podcast, we would love for you to leave us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast app. And if it's on Apple Podcasts, if you leave a 5-star review and you leave a little blurb telling people what you like about the podcast and we read it on air and you live within the continental United States, if we read it, we'll reach out to you or put the news out there and you can reach out to us and we will send you a little thank you gift for taking the time to leave a 5-star gift. We've had an influx of 5-star reviews recently, so it seems our bribery is working, and I am not ashamed to admit that it is. So we have another 5-star review to read later on, Liam. It is short mm-hmm. and sweet, and maybe a prime example of, hey, you don't need to invest a lot of time in writing your reviews. A 5-star review with a single sentence will be enough, and we'll send you a little thank you gift. But we'll get into that a little bit later. We will, of course, kick things off here with our review with the official IMDb synopsis for this week's episode, which originally aired on Fox Kids September the 15th, 1995, meaning we just passed the 28-year anniversary of this episode's debut just a few months ago. And Liam, of course, before we get the IMDb synopsis, I will, of course, remind you and all of the listeners that this segment is brought to you by The Pod Tower. head over to youtube.com/thepodtower today and subscribe if you like DC animation podcasts and podcasts that discuss DC animation. We have a channel for you. There you will find the entire Tim Talk podcast library in which they covered every episode of the DCAU. You also find the Jump on the Batwagon podcast from our friends over at the Watchtower Database, currently reviewing Superman the Animated Series. And of course, a little old podcast called the DCAU Review has their entire library, including bonus episodes and much more, there in one convenient place. Head over to youtube.com/thepodtower today and subscribe.
Absolutely. So this is the synopsis for The Lion and the Unicorn, which, of course, was written by three people: Diane Duane, Peter Morwood. I think it says like Patrick Morwood or something in the credits, but it's actually Peter Morwood and Steve Perry. Not that one. Directed by Boyd Kirkland, music by Brian Langsbard, and animation by Dong Yang. And that synopsis reads as such.
Red Claw kidnaps an old colleague of Alfred's from the British Secret Service to gain access to a hidden missile silo.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much, I don't know, wait, hidden missile silo? Yeah, I guess, right? Yeah,
that's kind of it. That's told it for ransom. You could maybe add one last line in there, but I think overall it gets the job done, short and sweet.
Yeah, I agree. But yes, as we kick things off, Liam, we are reminded very quickly here at the beginning of the episode just the importance that Alfred plays to Batman and Robin as we kick things off in the Batcave.
That's good enough, Alfred. The people I deal with out there won't mind a little lint.
A job worth doing and all that rot, Master Bruce. I do wish you would put on a shirt. You're apt to catch cold in this dank cave.
Yes, folks, a perfect 10 for Dick Grayson to take the gold. And the crowd goes wild. Yeah!
Did you hear me, Master Dick?
Right! Yes, Alfred. Right away, Alfred.
I fixed your supper. It's upstairs in the oven.
What would we do without you, Alfred?
I shudder to think.
As Dick is practicing some gymnastics, Bruce is walking around with his cowl down, but Alfred is standing by, not only helping Bruce dust the lint from his cape, but also being very fatherly and recommending that Dick put on a shirt in the cold, damp cave so he doesn't catch a cold. And he's also happens to have prepared dinner for Dick as well. So just a quick reminder of the pivotal role that Alfred plays in both of our heroes' lives here on the adventures of Batman and Robin.
It's amazing these boys can dress themselves when Alfred's around, quite frankly.
Yes, indeed. I think Robin even says that. It is quite the miracle. But as Alfred walks up the stairs, we kind of flash forward a little bit, and he picks up a phone call to Wayne Manor, where his cousin, put that in quotes, you can't see it, but it's in quotes, his cousin Frederick is ringing Alfred and is alerted him that something is afoot and he's needed, if he wouldn't mind coming visit him immediately. And Alfred, of course, seems to pick up on whatever it is that cousin Frederick is saying, and agrees to meet him there shortly. He hangs up the phone and is quite pensive, thinking about what exactly could be the matter. And we cut back to Frederick, who is hanging up the phone, but we get the someone behind him in a red tunic. It is threatening him, so we know that this already is something is afoot when it comes to Alfred's journey here. We get the next next scene. We cut back to Wayne Manor as Bruce is reading a piece of paper as Dick comes down, asking Bruce where Alfred is, and that he went to get breakfast. Instead, all he found was, I think that's supposed to be in like a waffle, like an Eggo waffle or frozen waffle or something. It was not animated very well, but I'm just going to say it was a waffle.
Hey, was a butler's strike called? I came down for breakfast and all I found was this. Where's Alfred?
Dear Master Bruce, my apologies for leaving so abruptly. I've just learned of a personal matter involving a cousin of mine that must be resolved immediately. I shall endeavor to return in a few days. Your obedient servant, Alfred. Must be pretty important. Alfred wouldn't leave a dirty dish unwashed if England were sinking into the sea.
I know.
Later on, we cut to foggy London town. It is extremely foggy as we see Alfred has arrived and he's getting off a bus, a double-decker bus. They really drive home the fact this is England. It's foggy. People are wearing bowlers. He's getting off a red double-decker bus. And he's a
big red phone booth. That's like the only thing they were missing. True.
Good point. Yep. They could have thrown that in there for posterity. But Alfred is met by two rough looking gentlemen by the name of Bert and Ernie. We'll talk about them a little bit later in visuals, perhaps. But Bert and Ernie greet them and mention they actually identify him as Alfie. And they said that Freddy sent them to pick them up. And Alfred immediately is tipped off that these gentlemen are up to no good because Alfred knows that knows that Frederick doesn't like to be called Freddy, and that Frederick also knows that Alfred doesn't like to be called Alfie. So he sort of trips them up using his umbrella and is able to get away from them, disappearing into the fog. But that is not the last that we'll see of Bert and Ernie, as we cut back to Gotham City, where Bruce is standing by. The phone rings. Actually, he's not standing by. He's sleeping because of the time difference. He's awakened by a phone call, and it's Alfred on the other end apologizing. Bruce is more than happy to forgive Alfred as long as he tells him what's going on. But in the middle of Alfred's conversation, Bert and Ernie reunite with him and are clearly quite ready to get down to business and maybe abscond with Alfred, whether he likes it or not, leaving the phone hanging as Bruce is forced to hear Alfred take a beating. It sounds like, at least. But this, of course, immediately alerts Bruce that he kind of has to take matters into his own hands, especially now that he knows that Alfred is in London, and is he does leave him with the name of the hotel, I believe he tells him. He's managed to get that out over the phone in the conversation with Bruce. So Bruce at least has a location to go and visit. And so he and Dick jump in the bat plane, talk about how London is nice this time of year. And we're off to London to investigate just what is happening with Alfred and Frederick.
Yes, and just before that, there's a brief scene where we see Alfred being reunited, albeit against his will, with Frederick, and they reveal that their captor is none other than the returning Red Claw, a villain we have not seen in many years, both literal years for our show, and by the time this episode aired, as mentioned, I think, at least we mentioned it last week, this is the last episode of the new episode of the series to ever air, even though it's not the last production order. So this was like, it couldn't have been farther. She's in the first ever episode aired on Fox Kids and Cat in the Claw.
Yep.
And then she's in the very final episode. What a nice little bit of accidental symmetry.
Good to see you again, old man. I'm sorry it has to be under such circumstances.
Exactly what circumstances are we talking about? My heavens, Red Claw!
So pleased to make your acquaintance, Mr. Pennyworth. If you do exactly as I say, you might live to see tomorrow.
Yes, she makes it clear that she has this plan for as we find out, an abandoned missile silo. But yes, as you mentioned, Bruce and Dick head off to the very foggy London. Let's talk about this in visuals. This is a fun episode just for the change of scenery. But we do see Bruce and Dick in their street clothes walking around Alfred's hotel room looking for any sort of explanation for what exactly happened. And we see that the two thugs that accosted Alfred, Bert and Ernie, are still holed up outside and follow Bruce and Dick as they head into the alley outside, only to find out that they've seemingly disappeared. And in their place, Batman and Robin have arrived and take out the thugs. There's a literal, it's a car chase on a double-decker bus. As you said, this could not be more England, London stereotype if you tried. Yes, after a brief struggle there, Batman and Robin are able to crash the double-decker bus. And as Batman and Robin sort of begin to surmise who may in fact be their employer, Batman, the lazy bastard, is just like, we'll just wait for him to wake up, they'll tell us. And then Robin, doing like the tiniest bit of work, picks up the guy's arm and notices there's a red claw tattoo, and it's like, oh, hey idiot, we don't have to wait, we don't have to wait. Detective,
right?
You just had to look for 2 seconds and they found that out. So Batman and Robin head off to is this MI6? Is this the James Bond organization? They don't really say.
They don't really say. All that Bruce, as they're in that hotel room, kind of looking around for evidence, all Bruce happens to mention is that Alfred was like involved with their intelligence agency as a desk clerk. So it's not quite, and forgive me, I haven't seen any of the HBO Max or Max series Pennyworth, but from my understanding, that show basically made him James Bond, like he was a secret agent. So and that's changed from, you know, depending on what
I was gonna say. Yeah, sometimes he's like a Royal Marine, he's like more of a, you know, a fist to face type of guy, and sometimes he's more of a, like you said, more of a James Bond suave spy type, I guess.
Yeah, this I think it sounds like they tried to make it more boring, less like secret mission type of work that he had to do.
They mentioned he was great at diplomacy and may have diffused a few intense situations between neighboring countries.
Right.
No real world parallels to mention this week. The real world about that.
You could use an Alfred or two.
Yeah. Well. Oof, no kidding.
Before he came to the States, Alfred did some work as an attaché in the British security services. More desk jobs than field work. But he acquired quite a reputation for defusing diplomatically dangerous situations in high security areas.
And I always thought he was just a nice old guy who polished the silver and fixed me sandwiches.
He's fixed more than that in his time. Underneath Alfred's very proper exterior is a highly resourceful government agent. He mentioned his cousin. As far as I know, he has no living relatives. And cousin can sometimes mean a fellow member of an intelligence organization.
Oh, I hear England's nice this time of year.
But okay. Anyway, back to the cartoon. Yes, we Batman and Robin drop in on this secret government meeting, whatever it may be, and begin to interrogate the officials, who are a little bit reluctant to share info with them. But Batman reveals that, quite frankly, he already knows quite a bit about what's going on. And also says that if they give them the location of this this missile silo, wherever it is, that that he can bring them Red Claw, who's of course a very wanted fugitive across the world. So they agree to share with him this file, which is labeled not top secret, but which I think is very funny, very British. They learn that it's a castle just off the coast in Scotland. So Batman and Robin are off, and probably talk more about this next section in visuals mostly, but there is a little brief moment. We cut back to the interrogation as Red Claw is trying to get these codes out of Alfred and Frederick that will allow her to arm and possibly launch the missiles that will attack London if she does not receive her ransom that she is demanding. She in fact injects them. This is where it gets very James Bond. She injects them with truth serum.
And, one of and, those.
Yeah. You know, I guess it is, I think, a real thing. I don't know how reliable it is. And I imagine like the difficult part is, I don't think it forces you to talk if you don't want to talk.
Yeah,
maybe, I don't know. Maybe it just makes you delirious, and so you're more suggestible to answering questions when asked. I don't know. I'm not an expert, but it's just called truth serum, plain and simple here. And we've all watched enough television and movies to know what that means. So we get Frederick breaks down instantly, the coward, and gives up his part of the code. But Alfred's trying to hold out. And Red Claw, despite not having the full code, decides that she's going to give this television broadcast out to I guess the Queen, and demand this ransom, and or else she will be launching these missiles. We get kind of a long section of Batman and Robin fighting various Red Claw thugs. I found this very interesting, Cal, thanks to the DCAU wiki. You may be asking yourselves, this episode being based in London, I know we were all thinking it, how did Red Claw's thugs get guns? You know
what, I was just about to ask you, Liam. I sat down here and I was thinking, the burning question that I had, the thing that was the most unrealistic thing about this was, all of Red Claw's thugs had guns. We know England, London, England, you can't get guns in London, England. There's a gun ban. How on earth would thugs have gotten guns in order to, especially this many guns, in order to take on the Batman?
Well, thankfully, Cal, we needn't wander no longer. The experts over at the DCAU wiki page, just to be clear, I'm not mocking this. I think it's wonderful that this is listed in the trivia section of this episode. But here's their explanation, and I quote, "While Red Claw may have smuggled weapons into the country for her crew to use, the incidences of gun-related crimes are much lower in the UK than in the US, and one of the lowest in the world. It would ordinarily be unlikely to see the criminals all armed with a variety of handguns, shotguns, or machine guns. The former idea of smuggling weapons is the most probable, as criminals do not obey the law, ergo, they are not going to pay attention to any law that prohibits ownership of firearms." So the answer is that they're bad guys, so they brought guns. That's the that's the mystery solved on the front of how Red Claw's soldiers got weapons. So I know that was the burning question on every one of our listeners' minds, and I thanks to the genuinely wonderful DCAU wiki page for once again solving a question in their trivia section for us. But yes, as we continue with the episode, Alfred is still holding out. He's sort of speaking in various rhymes and riddles, seemingly trying to throw Red Claw out throw Red Claw off as Batman and Robin continue fighting through the thugs, as well as some death traps. There's like there's an acid room.
Yeah, I didn't get that. Like,
that's the only one though. Everything else is just guys with guns because they're going through a castle. But there's one room that just has gargoyles that spit acid.
Yeah, I honestly, in my mind, because it's so, it really, like, you can't, the acid doesn't burn through anything else. It just kind of lands on the brick, and it, like, you see the waves from the heat and all that stuff. I just thought it was a room full of coffee. I thought Red Claw was just emptying out, and it's like brown. It's not your typical, like, neon green, like they like to call acid. So I just assumed that it was, maybe it's tea. We're in Ooh, London, England.
Now we're talking. Now it
was the tea trap room. I think my headcanon says it was all hot tea, and that was what that was.
Absolutely. But as they continue on, we cut back to Red Claw, who hears Alfred repeating what seems to be a gibberish phrase, the lion and the unicorn fighting for the crown, which actually, here's another bit. I'm doing a lot of reading off of various wikis this week. This is a real, I believe, English nursery rhyme. Which goes, the lion and the unicorn were fighting for the crown. The lion beat the unicorn all around the town. Some gave them white bread and some gave them brown. Some gave them plum cake and drummed them out of town. Rhymed town with town twice. I don't care for that. But that is the lion and the unicorn rhyme. And that is, as it turns out, the actual code.
Give me the code or I'll...
The lion and the unicorn fighting the crown.
He can't be resisting the drug this long. It's impossible.
The lion and the
Wait, he's not resisting. This doggerel is the code. The lion and the unicorn. At last.
Alfred's code is not a series of numbers or any simple word, but it is in fact the lion and the unicorn. And so as we prepare for our final sprint to the end of this episode, Red Claw has the missiles armed, Batman and Robin about to break in, and things are looking a little dire as our villain gets a little bit more desperate to pull off her plot.
That is right. And so as Batman and Robin continue room by room defeating each and every one of Red Claw's thugs, she decides it's time to escalate things. She goes over to the counter. She had already started the countdown for the missile launch at 60 minutes, of course, like every evil villain would. But she then quickly goes over to the computer, changes the countdown to a much more reasonable 5 minutes, I believe it is. And we know that the stakes are raised at this point as Batman, Robin is able to get into the room and overtake the thug. Well, actually, he doesn't overtake the thug. Alfred overtakes the thug. With his help, Alfred knocks out the thug that answers.
Robin would never hit a woman, but Alfred doesn't have that problem.
He not only does he hit her, he clocks her over the head with a Louis the 15th chair, and is more upset over breaking the chair, which you gotta love.
Wonderful.
But yeah, Red Claw knocks out Robin in that moment. She comes from behind, hits him over the head, knocks him out, runs over to the computer, changes the countdown to 5 minutes, locks the door behind her. Batman is able to get through the door using some sort of acid or something. But once he's able to get through, Red Claw makes her escape out a side door. Batman is preoccupied with the missile itself, asking both Alfred and Frederick if they have the kill switch. They both say that they do not. So at this point, we know that it's Batman on his own. His favorite thing to do, and that is to get in the Batplane and chase down a missile. You know, if you've seen him do it once, you've seen it do him 1,000 times. So the warhead launches before Batman can stop the countdown. So he gets outside into the Batplane, presumably not parked that far away, and is in hot pursuit of the warhead as it heads right towards London. And as he seemingly has the missile dead to rights and is about to blow it out of the sky, he's surprised from behind as stowing away in the back of the Batplane is none other than Red Claw. She grabs him by the head, begins distracting him. This causes the Batplane to swerve away and out of control, losing sight of the missile. Batman has to do what he has to do to try and defend himself. Red Claw rips his mask off. Not quite sure if Red Claw is able to see Bruce completely or identify him as Bruce Wayne, but she does manage to rip his mask off. And Bruce, thinking quickly in that moment, uses the ejector seat, which we've seen used before, which shoots out the back seat. And we see Red Claw parachute gently into the River Thames. There's some discourse on the DCAU wiki as to whether or not she drowns, or because it is sort of in the middle of the river. And I don't know how vast this thing is, but I don't know. DCAU wiki seems to think since she's never seen or heard from again, that this is she perishes, perhaps drowns in the River Thames. But leave it to your own headcanon to decide. Batman is in hot pursuit of the missile and is doing his best to regain his composure from the seat. He now has a convertible for an airplane instead of now that he's launched the roof off of it. But he is able to get back on course, and just in the nick of time, just as he tried to do in the Doomsday Sanction, he's able to successfully knock out the missile out of the sky, preventing it from detonating directly over the it's Big Ben, but that's not what Big Ben is. Like I had a friend that recently visited London, and Big Ben is like one of the clocks, but it's not like, or it's the name of the building, but not the name of the clock or something like that. Mm. So it's what we uneducated Americans would call Big Ben. So
it was either that or the big Ferris wheel. Those are the only two London landmarks that stupid Americans like us would.
It wasn't the tube. It wasn't the train. But yes, it detonates directly over there, and all is well. Everyone is safe and sound. And we get a little postscript as Alfred and Frederick are at the airport, and Frederick tries his best to convince Alfred to get back into the service of things and to maybe get back into serving his country. But Alfred is happy in retirement and communicates clearly that he's happy with a job back in Gotham. So
I don't suppose you'd consider coming out of retirement
and taking up civil service pay grades again? Hardly, old man. I've become accustomed to my style of living.
It's a great pity. It was just like old times.
Give my best to Whitehall.
That wraps up our episode. Liam, thoughts on this episode? As we mentioned, we were coming in. I always looked at this episode pretty favorably. I feel like you agree with that. Did your opinion change at all from this rewatch and looking it under a more critical lens?
I don't think it's a masterpiece by any measure. And as we mentioned, there's kind of quirky things, like there's just a death trap in one room and then the rest of the room is just guys with guns and whatever. Like, there's little things I can nitpick, but overall this feels very much like, this is like a I feel like this is like a 70s Batman.
My gosh, shoot. We are two halves of the same brain.
I was like, this could be a Denny O'Neill, Neil Adams
absolutely
Batman tale. You know, Batman and Robin go to a castle to rescue Alfred from whatever villain, and there's some death traps and guys, and then ultimately Batman has to, you know, stop a missile. Like, this feels like a Batman tale out of a specific era.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be one issue, and it wouldn't be particularly seminal to the series as a whole.
Yep.
But I had quite a bit of fun with it, as just, it's a nice change of pace. We'll talk about that in visuals certainly in a couple minutes here, but yeah, I just thought it's a fine little self-contained adventure, returning villain we hadn't seen in a long time, as mentioned. So yeah, I had fun with it. I don't think it's seminal. It's not like a deep character exploration of Alfred or of Bruce and Dick's reliance on Alfred. So it's not like, I don't think it's like a super seminal episode for the series, but it's a fun little self-contained adventure that, as I said, it evokes like a very specific era of Batman comic adventures to me.
No, you are. I mean, that is exactly the thought that I had. Like, I could see sort of the faded pages of a comic book and draw, you know, a Neil Adams drawing of this comic. Like, that is exactly, and some of it is in the visuals that we'll talk about, but the story itself, like a Denny O'Neill style story where Batman heads to London. Like, wouldn't it be interesting if Batman had to go to London and had to work with the, you know, the secret agents of the British intelligence over there in order to, you know, prevent a nuclear warhead from being detonated. The only thing that I felt like didn't fit, which we've talked about, as an object itself doesn't quite fit with the aesthetic of this Batman, is the Batplane usage at the end. Like, Batman has to stop and blow the warhead out of the sky. Like,
yeah,
that feels like a little unrelated and just kind of like tacked on, and certainly not of that era. But I get it. Like, I don't know how else you raise the stakes for that final scene if you don't have to have Batman stop the warhead. But anyway, anytime Batman has to disable a missile, it's an interesting, like, you have to go through some hoops to make it seem plausible. But I didn't hate this episode at all. I still enjoyed it. It's not a masterpiece, as you said. I think that there are still some things to nitpick and some holes that are in the overall plot or overall story that you could certainly nitpick. I don't think it deserves to be at the bottom of a bunch of lists. I think there's a bunch of other stories that we've reviewed from this original run that I'm like, yeah, this is certainly better than this. So this, I mean, at the end of the day, once all is said and done, we've reviewed all these episodes, middle of the pack seems like the, you know, seems like the good spot for this to fit, like the rightful spot for this to fit. But I stand by my original thought process in saying that this doesn't belong at the bottom of the list as it seems to be so often, for many reasons. But it's interesting, we do get more Alfred than we typically do. I like that. It's not the Alfred and Maggie of Eternal Youth, Dollar in the Bad episode jar. You know, it's not some of the other comedic things that we've seen Alfred do, like in The Forgotten. This is a little bit more making him into a you know, formidable, interesting character. I wish there was a little bit more that we kind of delved into rather than just Bruce with the exposition of his backstory. But you know, it, for what they decided to do, it's certainly interesting. It certainly wasn't a boring episode for sure. And having Red Claw come back is fun. You know, I think we talked about it when we reviewed Cat in the Claw way, 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 way back in the archives that, you know, this character at the time it was like one of the few characters that had never made the jump into mainstream continuity. Mm-hmm. She has now.
Very recently.
Recently, I think at last year in Catwoman number 43, she made her first appearance in DC continuity. So has now made, hey, think about that. When we started this podcast, this character had not been in DC continuity. Years later, she's now actually in continuity. We've been
Condiment King made it into DC continuity before main DC continuity, before Red Claw did.
Which is insane, because it feels like outside of Ra's al Ghul, there's not really like the terrorist leader person. There's like a vacuum for that that type of character that you can point to. It's like,
yeah, this is like a great, like, yeah, like a you know, a Green Arrow, Black Canary level,
yeah,
hero villain, like any, yeah, it, like a, this international. And she's not just like an asset, like it's not like she's a Lady Shiva or, as like you said, a Ra's al Ghul, but she is like this, you know, this capable leader who has this legion of followers that all tattoo this Red Claw on her on their arms to, you know, in support of her. Like that's really interesting. Yeah, it is wild that this character has not found more use across the either in DCAU stories or in mainline continuity until recently.
Yeah, very, very odd that they haven't done so. But yeah, a very interesting character, very underutilized. We'll talk a little bit more about her. The voice that she carries certainly, you know, gives a lot to the character itself. But yeah, overall, I ended up, Liam, with a 7 out of 10 for my plot for this week. I think there's some fun to be had. I think Bruce and Dick, especially. Maybe the type of combat that they end up going through isn't as interesting as we would have liked it, but I love seeing Batman and Robin working together, just taking down bad guys. You know, there's plenty of Bruce and Dick working as detectives together, but mostly Dick actually doing some detective work. And as we talked about, the setting being out of Gotham really makes the episode to me, as we'll probably talk about a lot in our next category. But all of those factors working together, and there's that sort of love for that. You could pick this up. It's, you know, as a detective comics issue from the 70s, and like this story would fit right in there. That hits me right in the feels. I love that era. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of cool one-off stories that I think are lost to time, unless you have the wonderful DC Universe Infinite app, in which case you can read every Batman comic. Man, what a wonderful app, Liam. Am I right?
It sure is.
That's right.
But yeah, absolutely. If I didn't say, I also gave plot a 7 out of 10 for, you know, for all the reasons we've just talked about. And yeah, it's like I said, it's just a fun little self-contained adventure. Really like the Red Claw character, and it is fun getting to see a little bit of a different side of Alfred, other than, I guess, it's like the Forgotten and maybe a little bit in like his Silicon Soul. We don't really get to see Alfred in the middle of the action too often, so it's fun to see this version of Alfred, who's much more sort fatherly have to get his hands dirty, so to speak. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. And I will just mention, this only half counts. Red Claw does appear in Batman Gotham Adventures number 3, but it's like a TV version of Batman that a kid is watching on television, so I don't think it counts.
That's right. All right, good point. Yep, somebody may have tried to call that out, so got to cover our bases here. All right, Lane, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be animation and visuals. And according to the DCAU wiki, we have Dongyang Animation responsible for this week. And before we get into all the fun that we had, I would say the one word that I would use to describe this animation as a whole for this episode is inconsistent. Everyone, their models changed throughout the episode. I'm not sure if it was the difference in storyboarding, if this was picked up by one artist and then given to somebody else, or just different. Yeah, I don't know. The way that Red Claw looks in the first scene compared to how she looks like a Bruce Timm pinup in the last like third of the episode, the first part of the episode. She does not look like a Bruce Timm pinup. I don't know what she looks like, but very angular, more. I was gonna say
there's a couple shots like of like her back, and she looks a little bit more built out, like she's supposed to be more muscular. But yes, in that final bit in the bat plane, and then yeah, some of the other points where she's interacting with Alfred, I feel like she loses that, and like you said, takes on the more traditional, you know, very, very small, svelte-shouldered Bruce Timm, you know, generic woman body that a lot of the characters take on. So it's like, it felt like they were going to make her a bit more physically formidable, which makes sense because she karate chops Freddy and knocks him out. And then I think it's supposed to be she chops Robin in the neck as well. But the way it's framed, it actually looks like she just backhands him and just knocks him right out. So I feel like she is supposed to be a more physically formidable character. But yeah, I feel like her proportions change a little bit throughout the episode that throws that off.
Yeah, and I think some of our characters change how they look. We get more Bruce and Dick in this episode than typical, I would say. And they look, I don't know, they just kind of change a little bit from scene to scene.
I feel like, I don't know if the neck is longer or something. I feel like the proportion of Batman's head to his body is a little wonky in this one. I feel like maybe this is nitpicking, but it just feels like he's got the super square jaw and everything. Like I don't know if this is a Dongyang animation thing, if that's a, you know, just the way that, you know, Boyd Kirkland and some of the other storyboard artists who worked on this episode, that's just their, you know, their Batman is a little bit more, you know, is a little bit more svelte, but I feel like his neck is longer, but his head is smaller and it's throwing off the proportions of the very boxy, very square jawed look that he has otherwise. It's like it's not totally off model or totally different like some of those earlier season one episodes, but it's definitely noticeable. And I think it lacks, especially I think at the end when she rips the cowl off. And I will say, I think the animation as far as like the hair blowing, you know, blowing in the wind and all of that, with when the last shield comes down and whatever, I think is really impressive. But yeah, the actual ability to stay on model for these characters, as we've been talking about, a little bit inconsistent here.
Yeah, that's the scene where Batman goes to visit the intelligence officers in that office too. It's very, very odd. Like Batman's eyes feels like they're the wrong shape or something for his face. And he's just kind of, I don't know. It just does not look quite on model for that scene. So, I didn't love that. I felt like there was a little bit of inconsistency. Again, we've talked about it before. Like it doesn't have to be the same, on model square jaw Bruce Timm model sheet or whoever did the model sheets, you know, for the original, guides, but whatever it is, we just ask that it be consistent. Like it has to be consistent across the episode. Otherwise it might take you out. which it did in this case. But we did talk about Liam a lot at the top about our setting for the majority of this episode, which is London. Lots of fog overlay on a couple of the scenes, especially the scene with Alfred getting off the bus as he's approached by Bert and Ernie. Bert, by the way, I am shocked that not one of the wikis that I looked at mentioned. Obviously, we get Bert and Ernie from Sesame Street. That's a pretty mm-hmm. obvious one. But Bert is clearly visually modeled after Bert from Mary Poppins. Like,
yes,
he's Dick Van Dyke from Mary Poppins. Like, how did nobody pick up on that? He's the chimney sweep. He's the worst American Cockney British accent of all time.
Absolutely. Yes, that's a great point, because I did think about that with a few of the designs, but for whatever reason, Bert from Mary Poppins, even though as soon as you said that, like, oh, the way we'll talk about his voice actor in a minute, like it's the very over the top Cockney accent. Like, yeah, of course it's Bert from Mary Poppins. So I was one of those people that didn't necessarily notice that right off the bat. I think I just saw the Bert and Ernie and left the reference there. I did wonder, I was trying to figure out if Freddy is based on someone specific. Like, I was looking through headshots of various older British actors, but it's hard to find. Like, if you just Google British actor mustache, it's mostly Henry Cavill, first of all. And then from whatever Mission Impossible that was. And then, like, it's almost impossible. It's an ungoogleable question. So if anyone out there, if that catches your eye as a specific actor that Freddy's based on, please reach out to us on the socials.
Absolutely. Yeah. But as far as a setting is concerned, very cool. I love the little fog overlays that they did. Not only does it sort of blur some of the edges of the way that the images come across. And maybe, if we are able to talk with one of our friends of the show that worked on this this episode or any of the other episodes, it's a trick obviously that's done in animation, but it's just something that adds a little bit of depth, I guess, to the visuals that you're looking at. Like, rather than just drawing smoke, you're creating this kind of blur that you would see the flash of light if you were kind of seeing it yourself with your own eyes. So that it kind of smooths out some of the edges and makes things shine a little bit and have like a little bit of afterglow type feel to it. I really, really enjoyed the scenes that they had. There's the scene also later on when Bruce and Dick are leaving the apartment, or they're after they've investigated the apartment, and they get accosted or attempt to get accosted on the street by Bert and Ernie. And then the chase, as you mentioned, on the double decker bus, the most London car chase you could possibly have. I loved all of that aesthetics there. I loved having it in a different place, different feel. And while it mostly almost completely takes place at night, we get the one scene with Alfred sitting by the hotel window making his phone call, but mostly everything is at night. It felt like this was authentic DC London. Like, I felt like everything seemed to be matched up. Obviously, you don't get a whole lot of looks at the architecture other than the place where the missile silo is. But that it, in and of itself, is also made of like brick, which gives you the idea of this castle feel. But yeah, I thought authentically European, at least from this American's perspective. Any thoughts or just anything else as far as the setting and the aesthetics for DCAU London was concerned?
Honestly, it reminded me so much, because of all the fog and the dark, it felt like we got back to those really early episodes of the series, like the black paper mm-hmm. backgrounds, which I'm sure were still used to an extent, but I just feel like the show, as it went on, and especially once, you know, the more, the later episodes, the Adventures of Batman and Robin episodes are so much different and so visually different and visually brighter. So getting using this, I felt like, was almost an excuse to go back to those very early episodes, especially that first scene where Alfred's walking through the fog and Bert and Ernie run up on him, and then he, runs back to his hotel and kind of disappears into the fog. I was like, gosh, that's dark. Like, it's Alfred's in like a dark gray hat and coat, and he's running into the fog against these completely black buildings, and there's just like a little bit of light from the street lamps or whatever drawn in. Like it's a very, very dark aesthetic to that. And even I think the sequence where they're running, where Batman and Robin are running through the castle, I think that's kind of fun and dark and gothic as well. Obviously it's supposed to be this old Scottish castle with the gargoyles and everything, but they're running up around like the spiral staircase and you know, the guys with the machine guns are bearing down on them. So I think there's a lot of fun, a lot of aesthetic in it. As well as, you know, again, going into a different country, a different type of architecture than we're used to seeing. I felt like it also allowed them from a color palette standpoint to just kind of go back to the very early roots of this series. You know, those crazy guys drawing backgrounds on black paper. Like, so it was kind of fun to see that that sort of color palette evoked again.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned the scenes with Batman kind of making his way. If it was a video game, it's like the pathway to the final boss, right? You got to level up. You're going through the different levels.
Oh, this would have been a great level for the SNES Batman and Adventures of Batman and Robin game, by the way.
Oh, now you're talking rewriting history here. Come on. Give me all of the buys for that one. But yeah, as you're working your way up there, I love the, as we mentioned, even though it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, like the gargoyles with the hot tea coming out of their mouth. even the effects that they did in that with like communicating the liquid was, temperature was hot. You could see the heat waves coming up off of the ground and sort of distorting the vision as you're looking through it, just as you would on a hot summer day, you know, seeing the heat waves come up off of it. So whatever this liquid is, certainly I love the way that they communicated. Also, Batman and Robin just pull the guards off that come out to check on them once this liquid is passed, and they throw them down into the liquid. Are they dead?
That's a great question.
If it's acid, they burn, they're disintegrated. If it's burning lava hot liquid of some other kind, they're tossed into what sounds like a lot of it, because the room seemingly filled up with it or enough to create a puddle for them to splash into. That doesn't cool off immediately. So maybe they're just maimed. They're incredibly burned individuals.
Yeah, maybe there's like a moat or whatever down below, so there's just like regular seawater mixing in with the
now
molten tea. We'd like to think that Batman and Robin didn't murder these guys, but we don't know for sure.
It's true.
They don't get keep alive groans, so we'll never know for sure.
Headcanon. That's right. And then the next scene is maybe one of my favorite things that they did as a way just to evoke how cool Batman is, where they're going to the next level. There's a door and there's these guys that are just terrified on the other side, having heard and seen Batman work his way up already through this. And there's a knock at the door and they open the door and it's their friend, one of their colleagues, and he just kind of wanders in, faints, and then these smoke bombs pop out of his hat. Like, what an incredibly cool visual. And then Batman and Robin go to work just taking these guys apart.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a phenomenal sequence. I also I love the bit where there's like three of the camera is sort of facing these three guys as they're walking towards the camera, and then there's like four of them, and we see Batman take just like swoop in from the side and take one of them out. And then the next guy Robin takes out, and then Batman takes the other guy. And then all of a sudden the last guy turns around and all of a sudden he's alone. And here comes Batman to take him out. And you get this great zoom in on the bat symbol of his chest as Batman kind of bears down on him. Great. Some really fun. I would credit that to the direction, I'm sure, in the storyboards as well, of some of the zooms and transitions as well. They do some kind of cool, like I don't know where it's like it kind of gets cloudy, like it's like you throw in a pebble into the water or something like that. But there's some very cool scene transitions and zooms and things in this episode that look like they would be quite difficult to pull off in animation. So again, credits to Mr. Kirkland, the late Mr. Kirkland, and Dong Ying, our animation studio.
Yeah. So overall, I think, you know, it's as I mentioned, I have some problems with the overall look for the episode. You know, I think I think there is some inconsistency between how character models work. I would also point out, I think in one of the scenes, the driver's side of the double decker bus is on the incorrect side, which, come on, mm-hmm. If you're going to do a story across the pond, you got to have the wheel on the right side of the bus. You know, you can't make mistakes like that, but whatever, mistakes happen. But I'm here to nitpick. So, I will say that that's unacceptable. So, I think the climax of the episode, the fight in the cockpit of the Batplane, while it probably is a bit challenging to figure out how that's going to work, without being able to show a lot of violence, but also communicating that Batman is in some sort of peril or trouble, I think that it is pretty interesting how they ended up doing everything, cutting back and forth between the radar and the missile and Batman sort of being caught off guard. And I did not remember, even as many times as I had seen this episode, I didn't remember that Red Claw was in the behind him. So when she mm-hmm. jumped out, I was like, oh, that's how this ends. Very interesting. So yeah, it is kind of anticlimactic that she just sort of floats down into the river, but again, you're not going to have Batman beat up a woman. So I guess that's the easiest way for this to go. And he outsmarts her in the end. And the overall score I ended up giving animation visuals was 6 out of 10. I think if there had been more consistency with how our characters look, I may have given it a higher score. But overall, the setting is the big win, I think, for this week. And then some of those scenes as Batman is working his way up to the control room, I think, are a lot of fun and a lot of very fun sequences there. What about you?
Yeah, I ended up at a 7 out of 10. Like I said, I think there is some inconsistency with our models that takes me down a couple points, but still, like I said, the aesthetic of the episode, the color palette, and just the unique setting of the castle being, as you said, it's very final boss video game, and that final bit in the plane is kind of a fun sequence with it's not a hand to hand fight, it's not a he can't throw a batarang at her, like he's got to kind of outsmart her. So letting her pull the mask off and then ejecting her out of the plane is quite fun. So there's a lot of, like I said, I think the animation and the direction elevate this, even if maybe the side effect of that was that it was a little harder to keep everyone on model. Still some really strong stuff across this episode.
All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be music.
So we have a gentleman by the name of Brian Longsbard. Only credited with, I believe, one other episode of the series, so not even one of Miss Walker's other regular collaborators on this era of the DCAU. And I will add, I don't have a lot of notes. I feel like there's we get some like mood setting, vaguely London-y music when Alfred's walking through the fogs, mm-hmm. and whatever those we talked about, those strings or whatever that always play when you're in England, mm-hmm. On the TV show. And then I feel like we get some more traditional exciting movies. It's been a while. It's been so long since we reviewed The Cat in the Claw. I didn't pick up on like a returning Red Claw theme necessarily. But like I said, I wasn't able to go back and listen to that Cat in the Claw soundtrack and compare notes here. But I didn't have a lot of specific notes for music. What about you?
So I think I picked out, at least for the episode, what is the Red Claw theme. It plays when she's revealed, when Alfred suddenly realizes that she's behind Frederick and behind why Frederick was calling Alfred to come over and assist him. So I do think we have that theme play throughout, and I think it's played to perfection, especially as the tension rises in that final scene and she rushes to change the countdown. as Batman is attempting to break in. There's the song that plays as you mentioned that very, 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 very good scene of the soldiers marching through the castle, or the whatever they are, her army soldiers working their way through the castle. And as Batman and Robin are picking them off one by one, there's sort of this theme that plays. And then as Batman gets the last one and we see the look of shock on his face. I think the music there kind of added to that as well. I think the music that plays as Batman and Robin get trapped in the room with the hot liquid, and then the reveal of them being okay afterwards, I liked that. I would say the main theme that plays throughout, and then the culmination, the final scene is Batman is chasing after the missile, the reveal of Red Claw. And then ultimately Batman, you know, pressing the eject button and getting back on course just in the nick of time to destroy the missile, culminating with a huge crescendo there. I thought that was done pretty well. So overall, I think the music's pretty good. I enjoyed it for the most part. The Red Claw theme, I'd be interested to go back and check to see whether or not it matches up with anything we heard. It seemed like it did. Like in my head, I was like, oh, that's the Red Claw theme. But I don't know. Again, it's been so long since we reviewed that episode, so I can't quite say whether it is or it is not the same theme song, but it seemed like it matched the character. So I ended up giving music a 7 out of 10. I think it's pretty good for the episode. The scenes that required a little bit more oomph, I thought it was scored pretty well. And then again, our crescendo of the final scene and the sort of intensity that's picked up as Red Claw is revealed to be in the cockpit with Batman was pretty good. So, yep, 7 out of 10 for me. What about you?
Yeah, I went just a little bit lower. Just went 6 out of 10. But I do really like the music in that final bit in the Batplane. I do agree that's pretty great. So definitely some strong moments, even if there wasn't a. Unnecessary, like you said, there is a theme for this episode, whether it's a holdover from her previous appearance or not. It does add a lot to the episode.
Well, let's wrap things up with our final category for the day, and of course that is going to be voice acting. Speaking of holdovers, we have some returning voices. We have a couple of guest stars with our new characters in play here. We even have a person who's miscredited with the wrong name in the credits. Let's go ahead and talk about this week's voice actors and actresses.
That's right. So very quickly, we just have a couple of people worth mentioning playing some of the British intelligence agency members. We have BJ Ward. She probably most famously was Scarlet on the G.I. Joe cartoon of the 80s.
Which this episode, by the way, Red Claw very much could be the G.I. Joe. Like,
oh yeah,
that fits that pretty well. I love that.
Oh yeah, she's Cobra Commander or Destro all over, just minus the metal faceplates. But yes, absolutely, she fits for that. And then we have playing the as mentioned, Bert and Ernie. Adam Ant is playing Bert, which I love. He's actually more of he works more as a composer and a musician in his own right. In fact, Adam Ant had a band called Adam and the Ants, so yeah, very creative.
Yeah.
And then his partner in crime, literally, is Richard Doyle as Ernie, another veteran voice actor, pops up in a lot of video games. I think Metal Gear Solid was the big one I saw that he had quite a few appearances in. But they're fun, as mentioned, just cockney as can be, just menacing poor Alfred as he arrives, and then getting to interact with Batman and Robin briefly. There is a lot of fun from them. And then our other two guest stars, we have Roy Dotrice, I think a veteran stage actor in Britain, but maybe best known at least in live action, playing one of the main roles on the live action Beauty and the Beast show, which I believe Ron Perlman was the Beast on that show. So there's another DCAU connection for you. And I think also known as for his voice act and stage work. I like him as Freddy, and as well, you know, our main eventer is certainly Ephraim Zemplis Jr. We'll talk more about him in specifics, but you get the feeling that they're old friends. Like, they have a great, I don't know if Mr. Dotrice and Mr. Zemplis worked together before this, but I thought they had just like a real wonderful kind of camaraderie, even in these, again, another very, if there's anything else that's kind of James Bond coded in this episode, it's how sort of calm under pressure they are, and how sort of and the way that they speak to each other and everything is quite a bit of fun.
Yeah, they have some good camaraderie. It works out very well. You get a little confused at the beginning because you're like, cousin, this guy doesn't sound, I mean, he's British, but he doesn't sound anything like Alfred. Like, they didn't really go far as to make sure that this guy sounded like a relative, but then you quickly learn, obviously, it's not a blood relative. So yeah, he's a proper British gentleman, and he doesn't have a ton to do other than the brief phone call and then the interaction that he has once Red Claw is revealed to Alfred. But yeah, overall, I think he did the job that he was asked to do, and good for him in being able to get that job. And yeah, he comes across again. It's sort of Batman sort of through exposition shares that they weren't exactly like they were. He talks about them as desk clerks, essentially. Like they weren't much more than that, or at least he tries to pass them off as that. So yeah, I can see this guy being a desk clerk alongside Alfred, a cubicle buddy of Alfred's back in the day at MI6, which, by the way, I think based on our voice actors that are credited with being M2 and M3, it has to be MI6, right?
Yes, that would make sense.
Because we get, by the way, I'm not sure if you're going to mention him or not, but M2, who's the guy with the glasses in the scene with the other two agents giving Batman the information about the castle, he played Richard in Sideshow. So
hey, there we go.
A dual DCAU. And it's funny because in that one, he plays a much more regal British man. Yes. as he was, you know, he speaks in like Shakespearean tongue. So he gets kind of the flip side of that here, is he's still British, but he's more of the hardened secret agent in this one.
Absolutely. And then last but not least, before we get to our main cast, we have the returning Kate Mulgrew as Red Claw. Folks would best know her as Captain Janeway, I believe, on Star Trek Voyager. I'm not sure which Star Trek that is, or if that's one people like or not. But she was on it for like 1,000 episodes, and then also played a pretty memorable role on Orange Is the New Black. I think she was around for that whole series. So she's female. She doesn't have a mustache. If she had one, she'd be twirling it. Like, she's so, but it's perfect for what this character, like we've talked about, for this, you know, Cobra Commander, James Bond villain type of role, femme fatale. But again, she doesn't feel like Talia or some of our other, you know, international spy characters, really. She fits this role of like this international international terrorist leading this group of soldiers. She's great. I love how, like, it is kind of a simple, very sinister, very over the top performance, but it's wonderful. I have a lot of fun with Red Call when she shows up.
Fun fact off of Miss Mulgrew's Wikipedia page is that she was born with a full set of teeth.
Oh all right.
Like, out of the womb, already had all of her teeth. So go figure.
It's a bad week for wikis.
That's right. It's incredible. She's great. I watched, I think, maybe the first two seasons of Orange Is the New Black, and maybe three. I don't know how many seasons of that show there are. And she's great in that. And she is American, so she's putting on an accent in that. She's putting an accent in this show too. It's just kind of vaguely Eastern European sort of in this show. It's not like,
it's not straight up German, it's not straight up Russian. Like, it's this very odd like hodgepodge. Yeah, it's just like you said, vaguely evil European
accent. Right, exactly. So yeah, she's great. She's a wonderful actress, and I think it's the bittersweet bit about this, I think, as we mentioned, is that she's only in three episodes. One of them is a two-parter, so we don't really get to see all of her acting chops. I think she's wonderful in the scenes that she's in. The frustration that she expresses with Alfred holding out from her truth serum is palpable. I love that she really comes across as being frustrated when her henchman, you know, kind of questions the fact that they're ready to threaten to launch a missile despite not having both sides of it. Right before that scene, she's, you know, she's arrogantly sure of herself. I think she gets probably a little bit more dialogue in the Cat in the Claw, undoubtedly. But I think for this episode, at least, it's, again, it just shows she's a strong actress. And I thought that for what she was able to do in this episode with the little bit that she had, she plays that role very well. Like it's a voice that fits the character.
Absolutely. And that brings us to our main cast. We do in a supporting role this week have of course Kevin Conroy as Batman and Lauren Lester as Robin. Though as mentioned, I think there's again it all plays into like we said, even though it's not a deep like character study of Alfred or of Alfred's relationship with Batman and Robin, I feel like the camaraderie of both of Batman and Robin and of them with Alfred is really fun in this episode. And, you know, Batman and Robin kind of, like we said, being on this jet setting international adventure and then going around and investigating and everything. And is a lot of fun. And Mr. Conroy, Mr. Lester playing off of our main voice actor really for this week's episode, that being of course, Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. as Alfred. They're all three of our main players are great. And again, getting to see a different side of Alfred, him in the middle of the action. And like, you get a sense that he, like I said, he still has this very dry sense of humor about him when he mentioned something about, I don't want to disappoint a lady, though I'm not sure I'm talking to one, or whatever he says to Red Claw. Like there's that very like uptight British humor is still there, even. But you also get that sense of fear when the truth serum comes out, or when it's first revealed that Red Claw is behind all of this. Like he feels like he's in deep stuff here, and you know, making the call to Bruce in the hotel. Like he gets to do a lot. Like he gets to be the guy in the field, kind of showing the cool head. But then when things start to get real hairy, he really ramps up sort of the desperation, and then he gets drugged and all that. There's a lot for Mr. Zimbalist to do. And, not surprisingly, for a show that's lasted this long, talked about him so many times, but he's quite wonderful.
Yeah. He's in the discussion for the Mount Rushmore voice actors for sure. Just from his ability to do what he did for so long and be that voice and, the wit that comes across. I love that opening scene because it really establishes Alfred as a part of the family, as a part, mm-hmm. as opposed to just the butler, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
They really go out of their way to make it Alfred's the dad. Like yes. he's the dad and the mom, really, because he's cleaning Batman's cape off. He's making sure there's no lint on it. He's yelling at Robin to put on a shirt in the cave so he doesn't catch a cold. And then we're going to go upstairs and we're going to eat the food that he cooked for them. And then he remarks that, without, because Dick makes a joke about what they would do without him. And Alfred says, I shudder to think. And then, as you mentioned, we get an immediate, like this call that happens afterwards, and we get him and Frederick. And we already mentioned about the chemistry that the two of them have to have and did have for the episode. And he has this very overly concerned tone. And then, the shock and surprise once he's realizes who's behind the actual kidnapping of Frederick and all that. So yeah, it's a dynamic performance, not to mention, as you just did, the he has to pretend like he's been drugged. So he's communicating that sort of drugged state that Alfred's in. So all that together, comes out with a really strong performance for Alfred, and unsurprisingly, but it's a good showcase for him because we don't have, you mentioned a couple of the episodes, I feel like, where you get more Alfred than usual. But as far as a Alfred showcase, this is the episode for him to sort of star in, from my recollection, other than Dollar and the Bad episode, Jar Eternal Youth.
Absolutely. Like I said, I think it's fun getting to see him And again, they make that point, you know, in the, you know, Batman and Robin mentioned that, you know, he didn't see a lot of field action as an agent. He was more of a, you know, on the diplomatic side of things and a deal maker and a pencil pusher sort of guy. So he's not doing kung fu on anybody. Like he's not going Liam Neeson, the old man, John Wick on anybody. But he still has this, you know, he still has this sort of air of, you know, this isn't exactly his first rodeo, even if he knows he's in deep trouble by the end there when once the truth serum comes out. So for all those reasons, I ended up giving voice acting a very strong 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I went with the same exact score, Liam. I went 8 out of 10 as well. I think everybody's really good. You know, I think that maybe with a stronger plot, something maybe a little bit more heartbreaking, some more dramatic acting from Mr. Ephraim Zemblis Jr., maybe that would have pushed a couple of points up. But with that being said, it's still a great showcase for all of our voice actors today, and I think everybody does a really solid job.
Absolutely.
All right, Liam, let's wrap things up here and total up our scores. So totaling everything up, Liam, I end up with a 28 out of 40.
And would you believe it? I have the exact same score of 28 out of 40. Even though we didn't agree in every category, the numbers still worked themselves out to the final scores. And as we briefly will touch on rewatchability here, it's tough to say this is a must watch because it does feel so self-contained. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of fun with this episode. As mentioned, we watched this episode a lot as kids because we had it on a specific videotape, as mentioned, and then obviously when the DVDs and everything came out. So it's a fun episode, but it's as we mentioned, Red Claw doesn't come back. We don't really know what happens to her, mm-hmm. at least in the DCAU. So it's hard to say that like her coming back has that much impact to the story. But I don't know. It's hard for me to say no thumbs up, even though I feel like that's where it trends just because it is so self-contained. But like, yeah. I said, I love the self-contained nature of it because as we talked about it, it evokes such a specific era of like a detective comics, you know, gray and light blue Batman story. So like, that's kind of why I love it. But it's, if we talk about the cream of the crop must watches, if you're watching or rewatching the entire DCAU or even just this series, it's hard to say that this is like a must watch or yeah. even like a have to watch.
Yeah. I regrettably think that I'm just for posterity's sake, yes, it is a follow. You know what? I think because it's a follow up and it's a returning character, although I don't remember it being quite the cliffhanger as to, oh no, is Red Claw going to come back for at the end of Cat in the Claw? But okay, you could give it a thumb up because it's a returning villain and that's interesting and it gives a little bit of background to Alfred. So I guess you could give it a one thumb up, but that's why we kind of shifted from the skip it, see it to the thumbs up, right? It's a one thumb up because it's not integral to the DCAU. Red Claw doesn't come back ever again or hasn't come back ever again thus far. It's not really, you know, it is pretty self-contained. So for all those reasons, it's not that important. Is it going to make, if I were to sit down here and write the top 20 episodes that I would recommend to somebody watching this, would this be one of those episodes? I don't think so. Like, it's probably not going to crack the top 20, right. But I enjoy it. It's fun. It's, you know, it's still one of the episodes where if somebody's like, hey, did you like, you know, The Lion and the Unicorn? I'm going to be like, yeah, I really liked that episode. I thought it was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's hard. It's hard to score it. I think, because of the criteria that we sometimes use with returning villains and, you know, adding character depth and all that stuff, it does do both of those things. So you could give it a thumb up for that. Yeah. But I also wouldn't begrudge you for giving it no thumbs up either.
I was going to say, yeah, I feel like by letter of the law, because it's so self-contained, we could say it's a skippable one. But I would put this on the level of like, what is it? Prototype, the Superman episode where he fights basically RoboCop.
Right.
And I'm like, that episode is not particularly like, it's not that important or integral to the DCAU, although I think John Henry Irons makes his first appearance in that one, so maybe that's a bad example. But, like, it's an episode where it doesn't feel that important to the overall series, or certainly not to the entire universe. Mm-hmm. But I'm just like, 10 out of 10 times I would watch this episode. Like, right. somebody was just, like, looking through episodes of this series, like, hey, is that one good? I'd be like, absolutely, let's watch that one. And right. this Lion and the Unicorn. So it's a personal recommendation. But perhaps to preserve the integrity of the thumbs up for rewatchability system, I think this is a skippable one, even though I think we both have a lot of personal love for it.
There you go. A very clear as mud explanation for whether or not we recommend this episode or not. All right, Liam, let's begin to wrap things up here. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Don't forget, if you would like to support the podcast, as we mentioned at the top, there are multiple ways for you to do so. You can, of course, subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app. You can do so. We are on Apple and Spotify. Spotify, of course, has its exclusive questions and polls each and every week. So if you listen there, click on our little notes there. You can engage, let your voice be heard about whatever amusing question of the week or poll that I've selected to include. Of course, if you do listen on Apple Podcasts, we have mentioned, as we did at the top of the show, invited and challenged you, leave a 5-star review. And if you live within the continental United States, sorry to our international listeners, we will gladly send you a gift if we read it on the air and you reach out to us. So, Liam, we have another review this week, and this one is short and sweet, and as I mentioned at the top, is proof that you don't have to write an entire paragraph in order to win a little prize from us.
Absolutely. As we said, you can make it two words. You could say good podcast, and we'll read it on the air and send you a gift. But yes, we do have one here. And it's 5 stars. We only read the 5-star ones, just to reiterate. And it is from the username Nightmare King NWO. And it is titled, I love Batman the Brave and the Bold. Hey, so do I. And the review states, I love that you guys covered Batman the Brave and the Bold. It is one of the greatest Batman series ever. And that's all they said. And guess what? One, I agree. And two, you can reach out to us through the Instagram or Twitter messages, either publicly or privately. And like Cal said, if you're within the U.S., we're happy to send you a gift. But if you're international, we'll still, you know, we'll give you a shout out. We'll shout out your Twitter handle and all that. We'll direct people to your page to follow you or whatever if you want that. So you'll still get something out of it if you're an international listener. But we do appreciate that review. And like I said, I agree. I also love that we review Batman the Brave and the Bold. So thumbs up for that. And as mentioned, please leave us a review because it actually does help the show. Gets us some new listeners and gets it suggested more in the all-powerful search algorithms.
That's right. That could be you next week. Could be us reading. I mean, don't leave the same review as what was our Nightmare King NWO. Don't copy and paste. Don't steal his review. No. You know, change
NWO
a word.
NWO is for life, but like give it your own spin.
That's right. Exactly. Put your own spin on things. But yeah, that could be you next week getting a free gift. So thank you, Nightmare King NWO, for your contribution. Other ways for you to support the podcast include following us on social media at DCAU Review, both on Instagram and the website formerly known as Twitter, now known as X. We're both on there, and we love both. It's like very two different audiences on both of those social media platforms, and it's amazing the things that we are able to talk about, the things that we see, the things that we interact with, the people we interact with. It's a huge part and an enjoyment of what we do. I know, as we say at the top, Liam runs our social media. I am a sometimes silent, but oftentimes I will chime in with my own observations as well. But it's a lot of fun. We have a blast doing it. So make your voice be heard if you're interested. Those are also good ways to, you know, catch up on DCAU news and or, you know, anything else that's happening around DCAU or even previews of next week's episode. Speaking of which, don't forget, you can also support the podcast. Check out the show notes. There's a link there to support the podcast directly financially or through our merch store. Liam, we are continuing here with yet another Batman the Animated Series episode as we are winding down here as we get to the some really interesting episodes, some really seminal, memorable ones, especially for the two of us. So let's discuss what next week's episode will be.
Absolutely. So next week, another very memorable one, as you mentioned, it'll be the episode Showdown, which is really, if you look at it, one of the DCAU's first steps outside of Gotham City when it comes to a DC superhero or hero or DC characters that don't really fall under the Batman umbrella. And that's because we kind of not literally, but figuratively go back in time and find out a tale from the Old West involving Ra's al Ghul going up against none other than Jonah Hex. So a big episode to talk about next week with Showdown.
That is certainly going to be an interesting one. Friend of the show, Kevin Altieri, directed that one. So very interested to see and review this one. Was not a fan of this as much when we were growing up because it doesn't have a lot of Batman in it.
Yes.
But, you know, it is very interesting because now I think as DC fans, we kind of have a better idea and understand who Jonah Hex is. And let me assure you, he's not the guy from the Josh Brolin movie, Megan Fox movie. That's, boy, if we can get through next week's review without mentioning that movie, I will be an extremely happy lad. But thank you, everybody, again for tuning in. Liam, it's going to be a fun time celebrating, question mark, a Jonah Hex episode next week. But until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
And we'll talk to you on the next episode of the DCAU Review.
Adios.